The lights are on red. We're away.
Hi, welcome to MotoGPOD, the internet radio show about motorcycle road racing. My name is Jules Cisek. I'm sitting in for Bob Hayes. Today's Friday, April 25th, 2008, and this is episode 124.
There's been a lot of talk about the Ducati team pulling in Troy Bayliss and Max Biaggi from World Superbike to help them with the GP 08. That story broke last week, but there's been more details offered this week. Livio Supo has said several times now it's not an easy situation to resolve with Marco, he said. We have to try to understand if there's anything on the bike that just suits Casey, or is there just a feeling of Marco's? And the rules don't allow us to test with the factory riders on the MotoGP circuits apart from in certain circumstances. So we are thinking about having Max and Troy test the bike, but that is not for sure yet. We have two riders in superbikes with experience in MotoGP, and they have different riding styles. They are both very fast on our superbikes, so it could be very interesting to have their feedback. So Biaggi has confirmed that he has been contacted. This is actually off the MotoGP official website. He says, my priority is in the championship I am competing in, but they have asked me if I be able to give my opinion on the GP8 in order to find a way of improving it. I responded positively, but that is all so far. Talking about it too much is not worth the at the moment. So I wanted to mention Eric Fretsch, listener of MotoGPOD, emailed us last week after listening to the podcast with the chat with Liam. He said he had this to say. I'm just listening to the latest MotoGPOD podcast. Liam brings up an interesting point. Are riders limited to by contract when racing in a series with control tires? Clearly, that would be the case if you were in a non-control tire series and contracted with a particular tire manufacturer. But would that still be the case with control tires? So I went out and poked around the net as much as I could. I could not find anything in the rules. Obviously, this would not be a FIM rule. It would be a contract with a particular manufacturer, sponsor, whatever. I could not dig up anything pertaining to Biaggi Bayliss being somehow contracted to Pirelli. Pirelli is a is a control tire in World Superbike. I think it'd be kind of unfair to limit the riders from competing on different tire manufacturers' rubber simply because they are in the World Superbike series, which has a control tire. So I think that the Bayliss Biaggi thing, well, I guess we'll find out soon enough when they are on the bikes. And let's see if they can actually help out with the problems that Ducati's having setting the bike up for riders other than Casey Stoner, who I believe had an off day, actually off a couple of weeks with a Jerez circuit that doesn't suit him or the machine, and at Estoril, which also is not one of his best tracks. I think he'll bounce back strong in China, and the rest of the team will have to concentrate mostly on getting Marco Melandri up to speed, Tony Elias up to speed, and Sylvain Gantoli up to speed. By the way, when Biaggi was talking about this Ducati, helping out Ducati, he was asked what he thought of the current MotoGP championship, and he said he's been very impressed with Lorenzo. He's pipping him as a major contender. Obviously, he's not going to be saying positive things about Valentino Rossi or Danny Pedrosa, They hadn't even crossed paths at HRC. And also Lorenzo is a very big fan of Biaggi, so this is it just makes sense that Biaggi would give a pip back to Jorge. Back to the Ducati things, one more thing. Kropotkin has had another really interesting blog post, which I'll give a link to, about Melandri talking about the Ducati on his personal website. And it is it really does sound like Melandri is losing not just confidence in the bike, but confidence in himself. And that is probably the worst thing that can happen to a rider. He's a young rider. He's had a lot of experience on the big bikes. To see him riding out of the top 10, regularly fighting off last place is very, very difficult to watch. And I'm sure it's much more difficult for Marco than it is for his fans. So I'm really hoping to see some improvement in China, but in the past few months, after each testing session, Marco was sounding more and more positive. This time around, he's actually sounding more negative. He says every time, this is according to Kropotkin's translation of the diary, which was, of course, in Italian, "Whenever I think I've hit bottom, things just keep on getting worse." That is not what you want to hear from a MotoGP rider. And I'm really rooting for Marco to get it together and come back. In other news, we've got a story about Loris Capirossi already signing up for the 2009 season with Suzuki again. He's very happy with the bike. The team is very happy with his results so far. I think everyone's a little disappointed about Suzuki. They looked really strong last year. They looked like the manufacturer that pretty much sacrificed the end of the 990 era in order to have a better package set up for when the series switched over to the 800s. And it seemed to be paying off in 2007. But 2008 so far, results are mixed. We'll see how it goes. I don't think we've hit tracks where Suzuki is particularly strong, so we'll see. And Capirossi having a GP season in 2009 will make it 20 years that he has been racing in GP, in Grand Prix. That is some kind of record, I'm sure. He was 16 when he first rode in the 125s. It's important to note that that first season in the 125 World Championship in 1990, Loris Capirossi won that World Championship, and then he won the next World Championship at the 125s in 1991, and then he switched to 1992, he switched to the 250s, where he raced for a couple of years. He switched to the 500s. He raced a couple of years, had some good results. Switched back to the 250s and won the 1998 250 championships. This is a very illustrious career. Not to mention that he also came very close to winning, and in many people's opinions, was kind of robbed of winning the 2006 MotoGP championship due to his crash with Sete Gibernau in Catalunya. So 20 years of racing, some incredible results. That's going to be very cool, and I hope he sticks around for more than that. He's a great guy to see around the paddock and great guy to see on the track. As more Suzuki news, this is very interesting. It's it came out on the MotoGP.com website earlier today, and that is that 1993 500cc champion Kevin Schwantz is talking to Suzuki about either running the factory team or which is even more interesting, a satellite team with a single rider, and that rider being Ben Spies. So that is an interesting development. Here's what Schwantz says about it. Everybody should know that my heart is in MotoGP. That is where I spent most of my career, and that is where most of my fans are. I would love to be back in there, helping Suzuki on the management side, whether it is running a team with a single bike and Ben Spies, or whether it is running their factory team. So that, I think, would be super cool. He's a great personality, and he has good management skills already. He has been an advisor to Suzuki for several years. He runs one of the premier motorcycle safety, quote-unquote, courses, i.e. racing courses in the U.S. And, I mean, I would love to see him involved in MotoGP at that level again. So, let's see. We've got Assen World Superbikes coming up this weekend. The races are on Sunday, as opposed to the Saturday races that Assen holds for MotoGP traditionally. So it's on Sunday, and it should be a cracking race. I don't know if how many of you guys have seen last year's race. It's really worth watching race 2 from 2007. It was James Toseland and Troy Bayliss racing for the last 3 laps, bashing fairings, doing all sorts of incredible passing for the last couple laps, and ending in the chicane right before the finish line. James Toseland came up ahead of Bayliss and pulled a little wheelie, almost like a celebration wheelie, which slowed him down, and Troy Bayliss ended up winning by about 9/1000ths of a second, I believe. And there's this a YouTube video of it. I'll put a link up to that, of just the amazing ending there and how disappointed James Toseland looked afterwards. He actually said, I remember after reading after the race, that he said that the wheelie was not an intentional celebratory wheelie. It was actually just him trying to get hard on the power, knowing that Bayliss was right there. Bayliss has, obviously, on the Ducati, more lower end than the Honda did, and they were coming out of the short, slower chicane, and he just laid on the power a little too hard, lost the front wheel contact, and that was that. 5 points. Actually, 10 points if you think about it. So, James still won the championship in the end, but that was an amazing race. Worth watching again. I'm sure the Cathedral is going to give us some great racing this week, I'm sure. And speaking of World Superbike, here are some quotes from several riders from their press releases. I'm actually just stealing these from Superbike Planet. So we got Nuiki Haga, Yamaha, says, I have already lost some points this year, so my start is a little bit disappointing. I think that this year, now we will go better. Of course, we have good settings for here. Unfortunately, last year was not a good race, but the feeling is good with the bike now, and I'm sure we can be competitive. I've actually seen Nori do some wonders at Assen. This is, of course, before the track was butchered a couple years ago. But anyway, this is a rider's track. A lot of riders will refer to it as the rider's track, not a machine-specific track, so expect a lot of people, a lot of surprises, and a lot of pilots racing for the win. Carlos Checa said, first of all, I would like to say sorry again to Neukirchner for Valencia. It was not my intention. I thought I could pass, and that's all. Assen is very important for the team. We have good reference points from last year when James did 2 good races. Things are looking very good with the bike now, and I hope I can keep this level for the rest of the year. Yeah, well, so Carlos, I think, is taking every opportunity with the press, with any public statements to apologize to Max, who, if it wasn't mentioned before, Checo ran off in Valencia in the last lap of the first race. Checo ended up remounting and finishing the race in fifth, but Neukirchner was not able to get his bike up, and it turned out he actually had a broken collarbone, which took him out of the following race. So it was a very, and he had been leading the entire race from pretty much turn corner, the first corner, through all the laps, all the way up to the end, the final corner where Checo got a little hot on the collar with the chanting Spanish crowds urging him on, and blew it, and took out himself and Max. So here's what Max has to say. I had an operation on the Monday after the crash, and after a few days I started again with my fitness training. Now I am well, and I hope I can ride here very fast. I was very angry after the incident, but now everything is okay with Carlos. Now we are in Assen, and I hope we can find a good setup. I won a German championship race here, and I really like the circuit. The other Max in the series, Max Biaggi, says, who's also hurt, he's still recovering from the broken wrist. He suffered a very nasty high-speed crash at Phillip Island. He says, my wrist is better than before compared to Valencia, where I was at 50%. Now I'm at 80%. It's a good recovery. Unfortunately, Valencia and Assen are two very challenging tracks for a rider, where the rider makes a difference. But now, here I am much more confident that I can get a good result because my wrist is much stronger. I love how they say that. It's 50%, 80%. Like, there's actually a way to measure the strength of the hand. Bottom line is, rider's not going to say that they are 100% unless they feel completely comfortable after the injury. So Max is healing, and we know he's fast, and we know he's on a fast bike. So look for him to feature in the Assen race. Regis Laconi says, we did 3 days of testing at Jerez last week, and 2 days were wet, but we managed to improve the situation with the chattering, which is the main problem right now. We will also have some more developments for the next races, maybe Monza or after, but I think we have found something positive for the rest of the championship. Let's hope so. Kawasaki has not really shown anything too positive so far this year. The other thing that happened this week, Bayless had an accident on a bicycle. He crashed while he was training, fitness training, and he has a sore back. That's kind of sucks. He says, Assen, it's a track where I've had my moments and I like, love or hate, depending on the season. I've won and lost championships as a result of how I've gone here in the past. I hope, with it being my last year riding in World Superbikes, that this is one of those times that I come away loving it. During the race, you can generally afford to sit back and wait a bit at this track, but having said that, it depends on the day, how everyone is riding, and on the unpredictable weather conditions. It's also a track where tire issues come into play. I would like the overall F08 package to work a bit better than it did Valencia, as although that weekend we were able to get stronger each day, I was never totally comfortable. And his teammate Fabrizio says, I like the Assen track a lot and have had some good results here in the past. I was on the podium here in third place in Superbikes in 2006 and also riding in 2005 in the Supersport class, so I'm very much looking forward to racing this weekend, this time on the Ducati F08. I've decided to go back to using my former nickname, only for superstitious motives, really, as the last time I rode with it, I won titles, including the Superstock 1000 title. So I'm hopeful that it'll bring me luck this season, too. And that nickname is Uragano, which means the hurricane. That's it for the news. And now we're going to go to our chat with Liam, who is still in Barcelona, but shipping out to China next week. So here we go.
Hello.
Good morning, Liam.
Good morning, Jules. How are you?
Good. How's it going?
It's good. Are we live?
We are live.
All right. So I guess good morning, everybody, in MotoGPOD land. It's Friday. It's approximately 10 o'clock my time in Barcelona. And unlike the typical call that we do with Pop Monkey or with Bob Hayes, we are moving right now because I'm on my morning walk, which is something I do almost every day that I'm in Barcelona. Let's see. Normally I start either earlier or later than this, but this is a good average, I suppose. And I leave my house in the northern area, the northern Gràcia area of Barcelona, and it takes me about 30 minutes to walk to the internet cafe that I always go to, just because I prefer to get my work done outside of the house, and I don't have a real office, per se, so I go to this coffee shop, which I guess it has motorcycle connections because the wife of Kenny Noyes, the American / Spanish racer, owns the place. So every now and then when Dennis Noyes is in town, he'll pop by the cafe and we'll catch up. And this year, Kenny is working with the same physical trainer that Alex Barros worked with last year. So sometimes he pops by. And there's just some motorcycle pictures on the wall and on the desk. And even though I have internet at my house and I can basically work anywhere there's internet, I prefer to do it at the coffee shop because there's a little bit of people watching and I feel like I'm more productive there. I don't get caught up with doing laundry or washing my roommate's dishes or anything of that nature.
You got a good atmosphere.
So I'll prefer it.
So what's the weather like right now in Barcelona?
It finally feels like spring is here.
All right, good talk.
This is the first day I'm walking without a sweatshirt or a jacket on. I'm actually walking in just a polo shirt. And all these sounds you're hearing are the sounds of the city waking up. The city doesn't normally wake up at 5:30 or 6:30 like San Francisco or any other big metropolitan city. It wakes up a little later. I guess traffic doesn't really start till 8:30. And people go to work whenever. I think some people go to work by 11, so I guess
I'm moving there.
From 9 to 11, people are walking around on the street, and then they've got 2 hours to pretend to work. And then at around 1 o'clock, they go to lunch, or 1:30. And if they're really creative, they can stretch their lunch break out, and they go back to work at 4:30. Some of the stores will open at 5 o'clock. And then they close at 8.
So nice.
I've been here for a couple of years, and I still have trouble adjusting to the shopping schedule. Like, oh, okay, I need to go to the store today. And if I don't get to the store by noon or 1 o'clock, then I think, oh, shit, I got to wait until 5 in the afternoon just because I never exactly know when they're open in the afternoon, but for sure they're going to be closed 2 or 3 hours, and it's always Murphy's Law. When I go there, they're going to be closed. I think I'm on the most famous street now. This is Diagonal, which is, it's diagonal. It basically cuts through the city from the northwest down to the southeast. It's just, 6 lanes wide, and it goes all the way through the city. And I'll cross this street and continue heading towards the center. The coffee shop is, 10 minutes walking from the absolute center of the city, or what's considered to be the center, Plaza Catalunya.
There's a lot of motorbikes on the street there, right? I just heard one go by.
Oh, yeah. You wouldn't believe it. I mean, other than China, this is probably the most scooters and little bikes that I've seen running around ever. I suppose Rome has a lot of scooters, too, but nothing really compares with Barcelona. Not even, Madrid, the other big city in Spain, has nothing on this. I'm crossing a street right now. There's 7 bikes parked on the street, on the sidewalk right here. On the other side of the street, there's got to be about 15. If I get towards the other corner of the block, there's another 10.
Nice.
I mean, scooters and motorcycles are everywhere. I just passed the new Aprilia Tuono. Just kind of has the goofy front end on it. And here's an old PX200 Vespa and a lot of little Honda 4-stroke scooters and really strange Chinese 250s, you know, vertical twin Harley clone things and bicycles. Wow. It's really nice. You know, it's one of the small things that makes this city, you know, that much cooler if you're involved with motorcycling.
Yeah,
there's motorcycle parking on every block. And if there's not, you just park on the sidewalk, it seems. I mean, right here, I'm counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 12. There's 25 bikes parked across the street right here.
Nice. You don't ride 25. A motorbike in Barcelona, right? You just have a bicycle that you ride around.
Yeah, I just have a bicycle at this point. It's possible I pick up a bike just to get out of town and up and down the coast. But, you know, my life it doesn't revolve quite around riding as much as it used to. You know,
because you probably don't have very much time.
What's that?
You probably don't have very much time to actually spend in Barcelona, right? I mean, most of the time you're on the road.
There's a high theft ratio, I think, for decent bikes. And sort of my pride thing has always, you know, made me keep bikes that were a little bit flashier or not quite the norm. You know, normal average bikes kind of turn me off. So if I did have a bike, I'd want it to be some kind of special. But then I know if I'm gone for 2 weeks, it's going to get ripped off. Plus, there's the whole dealing with the Spanish government to license and insure it, and I'm not sure I have enough lifetimes in me to wait in line and take care of that. But it's a thought, you know, and I've definitely been exploring my options and talking with people and trying to see what I can do. I do have a bike waiting for me in Italy if I want to get it. Nice V-twin. And my only problem is transferring it from Italy to Spain and getting all the legal paperwork done in Spain to make that happen. And they're just, you know, it's low priority at this moment, unfortunately. But one of these days.
There was an interesting comment you made on your thread in the Barf thread, Barf forum. You said, somebody asked you, like, have you ever ridden a Ducati, Desmo Sedici around? And you said, hell, I can't even push those things around. They're so grippy.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of a tongue-in-cheek joke. They are extremely lightweight. I mean, it is just over 300 pounds, and it's not hard to push. You know, it's a very light bike. But as far as turning, they have a really low turning radius, you know, static, if the bike is upright. And then we've got a steering damper cranked up on them. And we don't use, like, the standard steering damper from Moline that you can buy, you know, off the shelf or that you could use in Superbike. We have a different specification, which you could say is a little bit stiffer.
I'm sure.
Then, that's pretty much it, I think. As far as pushing it around, it's the steering damper and the turning radius that kind of makes it a bear. And no, I've never ridden it. One of my teammates has. He rode it about 50 yards at some kind of press event. He had to fire it up and ride it a little bit down the street. And, you know, I'm a little intimidated knowing all the stuff and the hardware that's on this machine. If I was to get on it and kick the throttle open at the wrong time, I mean, as much as there are electronic aids, there is no cure for stupidity. You know, if you wanted to, you could override the system and flip the bike over on its back, or, you know, you could do all kinds of things. Even HRC's bikes have been known to do things like that.
Like flipping on Danny Pedrosa?
Yeah, like flipping and, yeah, flipping. No, at one point in the future, I would like to take part in the journalist ride that happened in Valencia. At the end of the season, there's usually one or two days, Monday and Tuesday, where people can ride the bike. And it's a select group of journalists. Usually each factory will take a hard look at them and what they've written before. And it's a little political, I feel. Like, I think if you rode the bike 1 year and you said, oh, this thing is horrible, you know, I doubt you'd get the chance to ride it the next year. But, you know, some people do get the chance to ride all of them, like Randy or Kevin. Randy's mentioned, even in the press, that on the different days that he's ridden the Ducati, he rode it on Monday, you know, following the race at Valencia last year, and then he rode it again on Tuesday, and he commented that, the power settings were so radically different. He felt that the bike was missing, you know, a significant, at least 10% horsepower. And I don't know, would you want to ride the neutered bike, or would you want to go out on the full tilt boogie, balls out bike, and come hell or high water, you're going to go for it? I don't even think about riding my bike, actually. I think about, this is going to be really odd, but I spent about 2 hours earlier this week at night thinking about how I'm going to rebuild one of my old bikes and exactly what I'm going to do to it and what type of engine I'm going to build. And it was just really bizarre that I'm working with, you know, some of the highest tech material out there in the motorcycling world, and I really just want to rebuild a Sportster.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I like them.
I saw the photos of your old Buell on the bike.
Yeah,
cars also.
That's one of them. I want to take it back, and I want to do something really special with it so that it's not quite a Buell, and it'll be a hybrid like me.
Very nice. How's preparations for China going?
I'm hoping today is the last day of prep, because every day I'm getting emails and phone calls. Do you want this material for China? Do you want it for Le Mans? Is weight a factor? You know, shipping the material there direct from Bologna, or are we going to ship it to Madrid and then take it from Madrid, you know, with the team? Are we going to take it to China? And then there's the normal supplies we need to replenish, just so that we can make it through the Chinese race. It's a little bit of pressure because Pramac is the sponsor of the race. It's the Pramac Grand Prix of China. And since they're our second sponsor, we've got to, you know, make sure that everything looks good. You know, it's all part of the big show. And then also we've got new material from Ducati that's coming. And I've been trying to learn a little bit about that because, you know, generally I don't have the technical plans in front of me unless I'm at the racetrack where I can, you know, see a breakdown and a parts explosion of something. And unfortunately, the technical descriptions that Ducati uses quite often are a little vague. So if they send me just, you know, a big PDF or an XLS file filled with descriptions and part numbers, I have a hard time, you know, imagining how everything goes together. So I'm just trying to get myself tuned up. I had a good dinner with some Ride On 2 members, or at least one Ride On 2 member, two nights ago. We went to an Italian place that has, you know, photos of all the Spanish motorcycling heroes and other famous motorcyclists, you know, autographed pictures all over the wall. And so we had some nice Italian food earlier this week.
Who was that with?
And talked to, this is a guy named Len Padilla. He lives in Pamplona.
Yeah, I took a look.
And he's got another website, fans.motogp.
Right.
So he just happened to be in town for business and contacted me and said, hey, do you want to grab dinner and a drink? I said, sure, let's do it. And I invited another, I guess, a journalist of sorts that writes for a Catalan magazine. And he came along to dinner. So it was a good, you know, three of us talking about bikes and a little bit about F1. And speaking of F1, it's this weekend here in Montmeló, and I think I'm going to try and do as much work as I can today because I want to get out of the city, and I think I'm going to go to F1 tomorrow because I've never seen their paddock and their hospitalities and what their scene is like. So this, hopefully, fingers crossed, tomorrow's my first F1 race.
Oh. Are you actually going to get in the pits?
What's that?
You actually going to be able to get in the paddock?
Yeah.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah. Yes, I have connections.
Right on.
Or I'll just break in like I normally do. either way. No, I think hopefully the connection comes through.
That's cool.
Ticket
That's
sales cool. are down for this race approximately 30% from what they were in years past when Alonso had a good car under him.
Oh, right.
I don't quite follow all the F1 stuff. I never have. This year was the first time I've actually watched a race on TV just because I happened to be awake at 5:30 in the morning and I couldn't sleep. So I watched the Australian race, which was kind of horrific that more than half, or I guess two-thirds, didn't finish the race.
Yeah.
It's kind of an odd statistic, but, you know, it was kind of neat, I guess. I just want to listen to the cars.
I love the sound of those cars, definitely.
It'll be neat to compare what a Top Fuel V8 and what a NASCAR V8 and now what a Formula One V8 sound like in my head, just to kind of program myself. I already know what screamers sound like, so.
Yeah.
Aha, Bob, I'm going to go to F1.
Nice. This one, you said you got new stuff from Ducati. Did you guys get a new frame, a new chassis?
I'm sorry?
Did you guys get a new chassis from Ducati?
When?
For China.
Why would we?
I don't know. I just,
or why wouldn't we?
There was some talk.
Because of all this talk.
Yeah.
I don't really put any stock in it. Many things I read on the internet. there's just.
But
there's
dude,
too much
if
stuff
it's on
there.
The internet, it's true.
I saw a photo. I might as well talk a little bit. I didn't have time to really get back into this thread. I posted something. Someone mentioned something about a carbon fiber frame being a possibility for a GP bike. And yes, there have been plans made by Antonio Cobas, who was a renowned, he was the Jeremy Burgess, basically, of Spain. He worked with Fidel Pons for many years. He'd been working since the early 80s, just like Burgess, with racing bikes, developed his own frame, swing arms, so on, normally with stainless steel or normal steel. But he had a design when they first broached the idea of going to a four-stroke, 1,000cc bike. He drew up plans for an engine to be used as a stress member. Ambulance.
There's your ride.
Always ambulances in Barcelona. I think people are having heart attacks left and right, or they just stub their toe, but they're really obnoxious with the sirens here. Even when there's a clear road, they do it just like, hey, look at me! I got a siren! Anyway, back to the... Antonio Cobas designed a bike. It actually was on the cover of one of the Spanish magazines a year or two ago. You know, and it kind of followed the standard engine, and then you bolt a headstock to it, made out of carbon fiber, and a carbon fiber swing arm bolt for the engine, and it kind of had a rudimentary chassis. I think, personally, I think the idea of a carbon frame is not such a good idea because there's a lot of different directions you want the frame to be able to move or not move.
Yeah.
And with carbon fiber, it's really tricky to manufacture something like that. I will say that Aprilia's got carbon fiber swing arms. You can see it on their 250s. And, you know, this spent a lot of years just trying to get a swing arm to work right. And even now, you know, currently, none of the swing arms are the same. You know, a rider will go out on the A bike and say, oh, this feels good. And on the B bike, it'll be, no, this doesn't feel good. And they'll change swing arms out trying to find the feel to match the bike. And it's not always there. And it's not that the swing arm's made completely of carbon fiber. It could be a really, really thin bunch of strips of aluminum or titanium, whatever you want to put inside there, and then you can cover it with carbon fiber to reinforce everything.
Mm-hmm.
Because at least with some metal in there, you can start your calculations. But it's just such a nightmare.
What's the benefit of the carbon fiber chassis?
It looks cool, I guess. And it's shiny.
I mean, you've got a weight minimum weight limit anyway, so it's not like you're going to be saving anything there. And I'm sure that the aluminum frames are not that far off,
I mean,
right?
As far as I'm concerned, when we come to something practical, like if someone says, we want to do this for less weight, the bike's already at the limit.
Yeah.
If we wanted to drop a significant amount of weight, it's really difficult. Even though I read somebody posted the technical regulation about having non-titanium axles and swing arm pivot shafts and so on and so forth. I mean, even if we had hollowed out titanium pieces there, we might lose a few kilos. But for the most part, the bikes are as light as they're going to get until we, you know, if you want to spend God knows how much more money, we could make the bikes lighter.
But you can't because the rules won't let you anyway.
Yeah, at this point, no. But, you know, if they do eventually phase out 250 and they start running a small four-stroke, and I don't know if the lines will blur between what the current 250 is and what the current 800 are.
It
certainly seems like the riding styles are close.
Yep.
About carbon fiber frames.
Yeah.
No way. Plus, the second factor is, at least from a practical standpoint, you know, a lot of things get bolted on with the frame, and you want to be able to keep evolving the machine with an aluminum or a steel frame. You know, you could change one and make a new one in a day or 2 days. You know, you can get on your computer and do something new with CAD and have your fast guy make one. You can't really lay up carbon fiber and have a new chassis in a week if you wanted one. Or maybe you could. You know, I don't know how many layers they'd have to make to build a frame, but for sure it's not something you can just make a mold of and then alter slightly and vacuum bag it and there you go. I mean, there's a lot more stress is involved than people realize, and part of that is due to the amount of grip that the tires have.
Right.
And I saw someone else posted about carbon bicycle frames. Now, that's good because, let's face it, bicycles don't take anywhere near the same kind of twisting stress that a motorcycle is going to go through, especially when you've got plus 200 horsepower and the grippiest qualifiers on earth. It's really not going to work.
Has anyone tried to do a frameless bike like the Britain?
Like the Britain?
Yeah.
In GP, I don't believe so. The strangest one I saw in GP was the old Rock Elf Hondas that had dual single-sided swing arms on it from the late 80s, early 90s.
Dual single-sided?
Yeah, one in the front and one in the back.
Oh, I see.
Sort of like the Bimota Tefi.
Right, but with
aluminum. That bike looked really cool. It's actually, they've got one of the bikes at the Honda Museum in Motegi, which is where I saw one in person. And then just the workmanship was really nice. But it's the kind of thing where this is also a race bike. You can't just build a work of art. It's a race bike. And if the guy crashes, you got to be able to put it back together before the next session or have it ready during that session. And when you get something big and chunky and complicated like that, you might as well.
Yeah.
You know, the budget goes through the roof as far as trying to keep it racing.
Yep.
So it's compromise. I think we've hit that subject before. Everything is compromise. Hold on 1 second.
Sure.
Want to see if Cafe Galicia? So.
Are you in the cafe now?
You guys made it along my morning walk with me.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, before you go, I wanted to see if you heard about Schwantz and the Suzuki team, the possible satellite team.
Well, that talk has been around for quite a long time. You know, the talk about Aspar getting it, and then talk about Schwantz getting it, and then maybe the two of them sharing it, and each having a rider, and which rider would Aspar want? You know, Barbara or Bautista, and for sure he wants somebody that's local because presumably the sponsor is from that area in Valencia.
Well, MotoGP.com has a story about Kevin Schwantz saying that he would like to run either the factory team or a satellite team with Ben Spies.
Yeah, I saw that this morning.
Pretty interesting.
My morning coffee reading.
Yeah.
nothing new there, though. We've known that for a long time.
I didn't know that there was a Kevin Schwantz connection in there.
Ah. Yeah, there is a Kevin Schwantz connection because he is a writer, mentor, and tutor for the AMA. And he's known Ben for a long time. He's worked with him and coached him, and every time Ben has come out to ride one of the GP bikes, I think Kevin's been in the paddock at the same time, sort of watching over him in the garage. And it's a pretty daunting thing if you take a kid that's used to racing motorcycles and you say, okay, now we're going to fly you across the ocean and you're going to meet up with a factory team and you're going to ride one of their bikes, and, you know, you don't know anybody on the crew and you don't know how their system works. It's quite daunting, I would think. Just for me as an outsider coming in, it was daunting enough just to come in and look and go, holy smoke, not even thinking that, well, I'm going to be the guy in the hot seat now.
Right. Not to mention he doesn't like flying.
Well, I don't know if he's gotten over that. It seems like I think if you can get over losing that blonde that he had, you can pretty much get over flying. No, he's a good guy. You know, I'd be excited to see Ben in the series. I think he's young enough right now where he could really make an impact if he brought his focus with him. I've actually had him in my race truck at Valencia last year, so we've had some words, and I think he's a really nice guy. I would really like to see him get his shot, especially seeing the lap times he had at Valencia last year. What I think his lap times were about a second off on the Suzuki. So, no denying he's got talent. I wish he was here this year as opposed to slogging it out for a third year in AMA Superbike. I think on a personal note, I think, you know, it's unfortunate that he wasn't here now.
Well, there really wasn't a seat for him. I mean, he's going to stay with Suzuki, I'm guessing.
Maybe. Maybe. Seat shows itself. I mean, didn't everybody expect Tolkien to stay with Honda?
That's true.
Now he's kicking butt on the satellite team. And like my satellite team had a rejuvenation last year, Tech 3 is going through it this year. You know, yeah. They had a lot of years out in the wilderness, and now they're on the sharp end of the stick.
I would call that rejuvenation getting real tires.
Oh, that too. But let's not forget that the bikes are really up to snuff now.
And that's true. Yeah, they are. Especially after Estoril.
Yeah. I mean, you can't put enough emphasis on tires and material. Well, the rider can do a lot, but he can't do everything. And we're seeing that with Rossi. He can do everything, but if, you know, one piece of the puzzle isn't there, then he's struggling. I think it's been amazing that he's able to do as well as he has in the last two tracks. It's definitely going to be a force.
Yeah, this is going to be a great, very interesting race, I think, this China race. This is where the Bridgestones might pay off for him, finally.
Well, I don't know. I'm not going to get into this whole Rossi Bridgestone thing again. We got to change the subject.
That's cool.
Let's talk about.
Have you talked with Chuck Axland any recent days?
No, actually, I missed Chuck. I said hi to him at the last race in Estoril, mm-hmm. and I caught up with Stevie a little bit, and it was like, you know, first the sixth place at Jerez, and then the fourth place in Estoril.
Yeah.
And I'm stoked for the kid. I mean, it's coming good. You know, after a year, you know, you kind of got thrown to the wolves the first year, having to learn the tracks and especially the European life and how crazy it is it can be for a young rider. It looks like he's on track now, and Chuck is going with him to the races, and he's staying with Chuck in England. So I think Stevie's definitely in for a good year. I hope he gets his engine kit as soon as possible. And, can really start to show that he's capable of the podium multiple times this year.
What role is Chuck good. Playing in that whole situation? Is it just mentoring?
Everybody needs. Well, every rider needs to have what we call an assistant, and in some cases they are an assistant. Like Barros had a guy, Giuseppe, that worked with him for many years, who drove the motorhome, cooked the food, you know, special food for him. Would call ahead and make flight reservations because Barros, you know, always flew separately from the team, like most of the riders do. They fly in later than us, and they'll fly out earlier. They'll take care of, you know, extra hotel reservations or anything special that needs to happen, as well as cleaning the leather suits and making sure the helmets are good. And, you know, that's some of the assistants' jobs. You know, Stevie doesn't have really anybody that does that for him. And I think when you're young, it's good to have an older guy around that has been around, you know, a couple years on the circuit, knows what to expect, knows what's crazy, knows what races are going to be traffic jams, knows what the best areas are, knows which restaurants could be food poisoning, things like that. You need to have somebody around that you can bounce things off of and you know, someone to look out for him. And I think Chuck's looking out for him this year, whereas last year he didn't have time to do that because they were still working on their KR project, and he's, you know, general manager of that team.
Right.
I don't know. I've got my fingers crossed for them.
The team KR thing is basically done for the year. I mean, that's... We're not going to see them, are we?
I don't know. You know, they managed to build a bike 2 years ago, and within 70 days,
yeah,
from getting an engine. So, you know, who's to say whether or not they'll get engines at some point, build something over the summer, and do the last three races or five races? You know, I wouldn't put it past them. I'll say that.
I'm definitely going to keep my fingers crossed for that one. That'd be cool.
Yeah. I mean, now that Senior's gone, there's only one loudmouth American left.
Nice.
I won't even say which one it is. I don't think Junior's going to be riding the Desmos Medici, but you never know.
Wait. There was talk about Junior riding Desmos Medici?
Well, there was some journalist was talking with Livio and said, well, what do you think about putting Junior on the bike? Livio, being as tactful and diplomatic as he always is, was like, well, I don't know. Why not? You know, like sort of a noncommittal type answer.
Right.
And how about Lorenzo? That was quite a display.
What, planting the flag?
No. Just how good he's been in the last, you know, these are big races that have happened. Jerez is a really big race, and Estoril's another fairly big race. You know, and all eyes are on him after his showing in Qatar. He's handling it really well.
Yeah, no, definitely. I agree. I mean, he has really matured. I mean, he really is. I think you mentioned this last time. I was talking about him jumping up and down on the podium, and you said anything for PR, and I think he really understands the PR machine very well. And in the 250s, he could kind of be a goofball, and he's with the big boys, and he's acting very mature.
Yes and no. I mean, I don't want to give my personal opinion on anything because, hell, who knows if I'm going to work with him in the future. You know, you don't want to shoot yourself in the foot. But the results, you know, I'm like most of the people here, I'm only in it for results. I want to see my rider or my team, whoever I'm working with, up there and doing well, and 10 years from now, whether or not somebody knows that he plants a flag or that, you know, he always has a lollipop in his mouth when he's on the podium or whatever. Well, all the personal stuff aside, you can look in the book, his old book, and it'll show, bam, three poles, boom, you know, three podiums. It's those numbers, that's the only stuff that matters.
Well, I'm not talking about maturity in terms of, like, goofy celebrations. I'm talking about the fact that he's obviously stepped his, maturity level up to be able to work with a team that is, you know, the world-class factory team in MotoGP. You know, I mean, he's working with some of the best people there, and there's a mutual respect, which is great to see. It's not just result-based. I mean, they obviously... I'm just saying it's not just results based. There's a good rapport between the team and Jorge. So,
yeah, absolutely. I mean, here's a thing. When Casey was riding for LCR, his chief mechanic or track engineer was Ramon Forcada, you know, renowned Spanish chief mechanic, and that's the guy that's working with Lorenzo now.
Interesting. I did not realize
that. I mean, it's, you know, people always say, oh, once you're in, you kind of just move around and you look for different every couple of years and so on and so forth, that's quite possible. So, you know, Ramon knows what he's doing, and the crew knows what they're doing. I mean, those guys are, it's world level. You know, they're not goofballs.
You're sort of starting to cut out. Could you repeat that?
No, I mean, they're world level guys. I mean, this is a world level team, and you know, anybody that doesn't cut it gets pushed out. And you know, this is the same crew that worked with Colin Edwards for a lot of years. You know, the same basic mechanics are there, and the structure is relatively the same. You know, you cannot say that Lorenzo doesn't have enough support coming from that side. But you know, at the end of the day, he's the one that's twisting the throttle. So, you know, all the backup that he's got to do something with it, and he is.
Yeah, he is.
It's going to be I think this is going to be an amazing season. Best season we've had in years, possibly.
Certainly, in terms of contenders, we've got a very good start. There's a lot of people that could be fighting for that, you know, top spot.
Absolutely. They say that every year. Oh, this is the best crowd.
Yeah, But it's really true this year. Finally.
Until next year. What happens next year? It's good. Let's see. Anything else interesting in the motorcycling world?
Well, there's a race in Assen this weekend. World Superbike. It should be fun.
I was just talking to somebody that wanted to ride that track out of all of them. Len wanted to ride that track.
Say again?
Len, the guy I had dinner with.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Ride on too.
Right.
He would really like to ride at Assen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was just like thinking about last year. We had some crazy racing there last year, so I'm looking forward to seeing the World Superbike race on Sunday.
Yeah. Well, the World Superbike is I'm definitely going to watch on Sunday. Yeah.
If you do Formula One and you watch the World Superbike, you got a pretty good motorsport weekend.
Yeah. And then you're good because I screwed up and I missed Superbike when they were here in Valencia.
Oops. And you're off to China on Monday, right?
Yeah, I leave on Monday. I arrive Tuesday in the morning. I should have a couple hours in the afternoon to kind of decompress and maybe walk through Shanghai a little bit, see the place. I mean, if this is our last race, then I want to try and absorb as much as I can.
So the race is definitely on.
Yeah. You know, you can't believe everything on the internet. Jesus. Do you really think KTM's going to paint their bikes a different color than orange?
Yeah, that's pretty crazy stuff.
Yeah, I just felt, man, it's only motorcycles, you know. It's not like we're starting a war or anything.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's the sleeping giant is waking up, and it's a fitful giant.
So far.
Let's see. Anything else happened recently in the motorcycling world?
It's been a pretty dull week, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see. Lorenzo signed books the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And
can you believe a 20-year-old guy has a biography?
Yeah, and it doesn't even say part one.
Yeah. To be continued. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess it probably says that on the last page. I talked to a guy that read the book in Spanish already, and he was saying that, you know, there's a lot of calculation involved from Lorenzo's side and his tight group, but the main theme of the book is different than say the Rossi biography, where Rossi, you know, when he does his little post race celebrations and you know, when he was writing his story, it was more humorous and it seemed a little bit more genuine and you know, like he really enjoyed his celebrations. And the guy that read the book from Lorenzo was saying that the theme and the feel of the book is more like a Rocky thing, like we came up and we're always working hard to achieve that result, and we're always pushing, and you know, we can do it. And it's you hear it in the Spanish media a lot, the eye of the tiger,
you know, the song from the movie, but they actually say Eye of the Tiger. There's Jorge with, you know, his Eye of the Tiger. And
he wasn't even born when Eye of the Tiger came out, dude.
I still like to say Giorgio, like the Italian media used to call him when he was coming up. Giorgio. Seems more like a Giorgio with a chupa chup. I don't know. Okay, everybody, go running. Give a shout out to my girl that moved houses. She spent this past week changing apartments in San Francisco. So now she's got a garage for her bike. Which will keep it safe from assholes that knock it over in the middle of the night.
Man, that sucks. Where did she move to? In San Francisco?
I think she's in the Sunset area.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Yeah. Or Sunset. I don't know that the name of the place. I've got the address. That's about it. But it looks great. From the photo she sent me already, it looks fantastic.
Sweet. And she, what does she ride?
What else is she? She's got a 2003 Yamaha R6.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And previously she had a Hawk 650 and a CB1.
Very cool. All right, Liam, we're going to say goodbye and good luck in China. Good luck flying out there. Get some photos
we'll
for us.
We'll catch up after that.
Yeah.
We'll probably have more information we can get into. So we find out a little bit more if Ducati is really going to test with BIV and whether or not there will be an F1 MotoGP bike.
All right. You're really breaking up, so this is probably a good time to say goodbye.
Take care, everybody. Enjoy your weekend. Enjoy the race, Aspen, if you're going to watch for the Superbike. And let's see what else. The date is April 25th. Yeah, it's almost Cinco de Mayo.
Yeah.
All right. We'll talk to you guys later.
Hey, thanks for taking us for the walk with you.
No problem.
All right.
Enjoy, everybody.
Ciao.
Bye.
Okay, thank you very much, Liam, and good luck in China. Before I sign off, I wanted to point out that the MotoGP.com website that has recently changed faces dramatically is starting to regain some of the old features. We were complaining last time, a couple weeks ago actually, on the show with Jim Reyes, that all the statistics like lap-by-lap breakdown and other analysis were no longer available. Those are all coming back now. I was able to go back to the Estoril results section, and there were lap-by-lap breakdowns and all sorts of good stats that we liked the MotoGP.com for in the past, even when it had an ugly face. And the other thing I wanted to mention is I watched the 125cc race after the fact. I didn't watch it live. So I used they used the Flash video player, and I have to say the quality was excellent. It was a much better way to watch than what we see when we get the real player or media Windows Media version during the live races. So I'm hoping that maybe they will actually make the Flash version. I know that it's almost like sacrilege on this show to say that Flash is good, but I do think that Flash video looks a lot better than the Windows Media, especially the stuff we saw in Estoril where it was weird interlacing going on. So anyway, that's the show, and thank you for downloading. Thank you for listening. Thanks for the emails. Bob will be back this week to do the show, I believe. So the quality is going to go up. And feel free to write us all at MotoGPOD at MotoGPOD.com. That sends mail to the entire team. Thank you again. Be safe. Take care. And ciao. We'll be right back.